Hi, everyone. This is Belle with Pop Culture Uncovered.
And I'm just here, hanging out waiting.
I'm here with Eat. Oh, my God. And we are going to talk the MonsterVerse. What we love, what we hate, and how Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures quietly made one of the best franchises over the last 10 years and did it without a whole lot of fanfare at that. Let's go.
Let's do it.
The MonsterVerse, for me, is one of those franchises that snuck up on me. Mm-hmm. I remember when Godzilla came out, and I loved that movie. I came for Bryan Cranston and Godzilla, and I stayed for the actual film. I wasn't expecting much because mm-hmm. the previous Godzilla movie was so absolutely terrible and wildly miscast that I was like, okay, but Bryan Cranston, and he usually doesn't sign up for garbage, so let's see what this is about. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you I fell in love with the Ford family as a whole, like the whole family, I was just rooting for them from the first scene on. Mm-hmm. So rooting for them, and that was one of the things that really struck me, is that they made me love this family amongst the fact that I came here for literally one actor in Godzilla. But I fell in love with this whole family unit. So mm-hmm. once that happened, and then Kong Skull Island came out, and then the teaser, the stinger, I should say, for Kong Skull Island came out. And I was like, oh, what? All these things are connected. Oh, what is happening?
Was it more for you than just Tom Hiddleston? Because I feel like
it was mostly Tom Hiddleston being beautiful. But I mean, you know who I am. Tom Hiddleston and Corey Forrester in a movie together. I was here for it. And then it was just such a fun Godzilla Kong Skull Island. I'm sorry, Kong Skull Island was so absolutely bonkers good. Mm-hmm. Just the acting, the special effects, the storyline, the fact that we had so much empathy, the fact that I was hurting for, usually when it's the humans, I'm like, I can't wait for him to just start wrecking them. But when in Skull Island, I was mad that they got pulled into this, because they were lied to about what they were going there for. And I was mad on their behalf and rooting for them to make it out alive, which is rare in a monster movie like this. And so it just snuck up on me. And it wasn't until I was watching the trailer for Godzilla and Kong that I went, oh my gosh, Legendary Pictures basically snuck a whole franchise under our noses over the course of the last 10 years. And not only did they sneak it in under our noses, but it's really, really good. So, Pete, you didn't grow up with these movies like I did. I will say, from my personal experience, my grandfather and I, there were three things that we watched every Saturday. We watched Westerns, we watched Lauren Green's Animal Kingdom. Only people of a certain age range are going to know what the hell that is. And we watch monster movies. We watch the old Toho Godzilla movies and the Fay Wray Kong movie. And that was our ritual. That was something that we did together every Saturday morning, come hell or high water. So I grew up with these. Pete, you, on the other hand, from what I understand, are not somebody who grew up with this, like, as almost a formative part of you growing up. So what brought you into this universe?
I think it was the opportunity to get into the universe is what got me into the universe. And that makes, it may not make sense, but for me it was, look, I grew up, you know, with, everybody knew Godzilla, everybody knew King Kong, everybody knew, you know, these monster movies. But it wasn't something that I watched. I watched, like, you know, Ultraman, and I watched, you know, a lot of the Japanese cartoons that had been, you know, brought to America, you know, ported and rewritten and everything. And I, you know, just like everyone, I knew who the monsters were, but I just wasn't into it. And then, you know, so the 90s come around and we've got the 90s Godzilla with, you know, Matthew Broderick and the whole thing. And it was such a huge event. You know, it was one of those movies, you know, like the 90s just became known for, where, you know, you're going to have, you know, the big soundtrack and you're going to have, you know, a fast food tie-in where they'll, you know, be like a quadruple sized, you know, cheeseburger, and they're going to call it the Godzilla. And so I bought into the hype because I was like, well, this is my opportunity to get into Godzilla. And of course it was just god awful because it was so apologetic. It was like, you know, this isn't your father's Godzilla, because that was corny. So they made something twice as corny and even worse. And none of it stuck around because it really just wanted so badly to be Jurassic Park, and then found ways to be even cringier than the cringiest Jurassic Park. And so the same thing sort of happened to me, like with King Kong. God bless Peter Jackson, but like the horribly miscast King Kong, starting with Jack Black, even Adrian Brody's presence wasn't really, you know, all that reassuring to me. Like, it was just kind of, it was such an homage, but it was too much of one. And so it was just slow. And so I really had no expectations, Belle, when like the first Godzilla movie came out. And, you know, and also it didn't give me monsters that I was familiar with other than Godzilla. So it was like, oh, this is a nice watch. But, you know, one of the things that I felt was a misstep is you bring me these great characters played by these great actors, and then almost none of them return from movie to movie to movie. In fact, the humans are sort of the least compelling part of it. But you're right, it stuck up on me. Every other year, we were getting a new monster movie. And Kong Skull Island, I think one of the smartest decisions ever was, you know, having Sam Jackson be, you know, a tragic kind of villain. And the presence of like these strong actors that just played alongside each other really well were really fun, because it felt like, because I don't love King Kong. I never really been into King Kong, but that they made it such a compelling movie by being there that, like, you know, I was in. I loved, you know, King of the Monsters, where like, oh, like I said, I didn't watch the monster movies, but I know who Mothra is. I know who Rodan is. I know who, and so like seeing these monsters pop up, and then King Ghidorah, and I'm like, wait a minute, like this is somehow manages to be like a modern monster movie in this sort of, you know, post Super 8 big monster kind of movies, in that kind of way, but then in a way that's also like, we're not gonna not have a three-headed dragon monster. We're not gonna not like And Monarch being so like conspiratorial and so weird, and like an organization, like, wait a minute, are they the good guys or the bad guys? Are they helping the monsters or killing the monsters? I feel like Monarch and the TV series that we're not really going to get into much. Monarch's portrayal is still bonkers to me, and I don't know. And the TV show especially makes it like I don't even know who to root for anymore. But all of that is kind of takes a back seat to how much fun it is to see the monsters rampage. When you get to Godzilla versus Kong, there's just so much fun to be had. Like, they're like, you know what? Hollow Earth. We're just doing it. If this is the only way we can explain these monsters, then guess what? Hollow Earth. And I'm like, well, that's the dumbest thing. I'm with it. I'm on board. Because in my headcanon, when they go through that portal thing, I'm like, they're just going to another universe.
Yep.
That's it. And then when they come back, they're just coming back from that other universe. And I don't care that it's like upside down and right side up. They're like, it's good enough. And then to me, you know, the latest, you know, Godzilla versus Kong, the thing I just loved the most was like, we're doing Mecha Godzilla, huh? We're just going to do it. And it's going to be so much fun. And so I have really enjoyed it, and I think it even more so, it made me immediately start watching YouTube, you know, compilations of old fights from the monster movies, and these like painstaking videos that are put together that like compare all the different eras of Godzilla, all the different eras of the monsters that Godzilla fought. And so now I'm kind of just kind of like all in. I went from not being a fan of any monster movies really at all, in this, in, you know, in that universe, to being like, man, I could almost, I could get a Godzilla tattoo, maybe. I don't know. So that's the journey that I've been on, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, one of the things that they did really well, at least in the first three movies, and it's something we're going to get into because it is not a perfect franchise, no franchise is one of the things that was missing is that from the 90s versions of Godzilla was that we didn't care about the human characters, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Not at all.
So I would they were disposable. And they did a great job of balancing the build up of the human characters in this series to the build up to the monsters, as it were, to the kaiju, as they are. That's technically what they're called, kaiju.
Right.
To the point where there's a moment in Godzilla where Godzilla and Brody look at each other. Brody Ford, who's played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, and Brody has just literally saved Godzilla. Brody caused a big enough distraction for Godzilla to be able to do what Godzilla do. And Godzilla sees him, and Brody is hurt. He's hurting bad, but he did what he needed to do to give Godzilla the time to do what he needed to do. And that moment, I remember seeing it in the theater and getting a chill down my spine because it felt real. I don't know how else to explain it. It felt like they understood each other. Because up until that point, Brody, all Brody cared about was getting back to his family and finding a way to make whatever this was stop. Because to him, up until that moment, Godzilla is the reason that he had lost his parents. He didn't know that Godzilla actually had been trying to save everyone from the things that really were killing people. And so that moment where you see them have the understanding, and it happens twice. It happens once after Brody gives the sets the babies of the Mudos on fire. And here's the thing they did so well, and it's a little bit of a tangent. They even made me feel bad for the Mudos because they were asleep minding their own business. And it wasn't until humans came along and started drilling where they weren't supposed to that all hell broke loose. They were minding their own business, not messing with nobody. And here we come, as usual, which we see in real life over and over and over again, messing with stuff we don't have no business doing out of greed, that sets the whole chain of events of the movie off. And the fact that they made me feel bad for these terrifying things. That I was like, they just want to have their babies in peace. Leave them alone. Find a
Well,
different planet for them to be on, but don't do this. Not this.
and the funny thing to me is that that is a central theme of Godzilla of these kaiju movies anyway, starting with Godzilla, is that like we made this happen. And Godzilla as an allegory, I mean, like that's nothing new, and it's certainly nothing that like people aren't aware of, but I feel like it's executed in a really good way. Like every time a monster goes on a rampage, it's because somebody did something they didn't need to do. In every single one of these movies, it was like, sort of like, why don't you just leave Skull Island alone? Why don't we just not dig down into the middle of the earth? And it's like, what? Why don't we not build a Mecha Godzilla? Let's
Say it louder for
all
the
of
people
these
in
things.
the back.
It's amazing though, when you look at this, like so many people have been in these movies. And that's both to me a good thing and then also like a waste. I hate seeing these characters show up in one movie and disappear. What even happened to the Brody family? You had Elizabeth Olsen. You could have just not paid for Elizabeth Olsen to show up in a movie if you're not going to bring her back, if you're not going to have continuity from movie to movie to movie. I feel like the only one we really saw that was Godzilla King of the Monsters, and then Godzilla versus Kong. And the funny thing to me is you have of I mean just all these actors that we have, but Damn it, where'd it go? You have Rebecca Hall. How is she not playing the mom of Millie Bobby Brown? They basically cloned. But instead, you know, we had
Vera.
Vera, yeah, love. Vera. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love
she's
Vera.
Awesome.
She's
but also,
a part of two of my favorite yeah. franchises, both this one and the Haunting franchise, or the one that started with the nun. So
right.
I love Vera,
but like,
you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, and you're 100% right. Like, how is she not the mother of Millie Bobby Brown's
right.
character when she looks, Millie Bobby Brown's face looks like it was cloned off of her
right.
face? Holy
But there's
crap.
so many of these characters where I'm just like, we only get them for like one movie. Are you kidding me? We get Andy Serkis for one. We get, we get O'Shea Jackson for one movie. We or you know one and a half. We get Bradley Whitford for one movie, and that's it. Aisha Hines we get for one movie, and that's it. We get you know like, there's just so many people that are like, I want these people back, because the other thing is bringing these people back gives a continuity and makes me give would give me some sort of understanding, of who I'm supposed to be like who. Who is responsible for what? Again, it's that like that specter of Monarch where I'm like, are there factions within Monarch? The TV show did nothing to clarify this. It only made things more muddy and more weird and more frustrating. The when we do get threads, you know, of actors coming back, Millie Bobby Brown and Kyle Chandler, obviously, you know, father and daughter, but at the same time, like they have very little interaction with one another, and like and it was an utter waste of Lance Reddick, who you know we won't get again, and so there's just so many things happening with the people that like the people become like the most frustrating and most boring part of the franchise, which I guess has always been true, but because the monsters always take center stage, but it does feel like. More continuity would be more continuity to me would, all right. More continuity of actors to me would help this story feel more complete.
I like that. One of the things that the only character who has been in almost every movie that is not Millie Bobby Brown's character is Kim Watanabe.
Right.
And if he hasn't been there, if Dr. Sarazawa isn't in the movie, then his family is linked in some type of way, because his son is the reason we get Mechagodzilla. And if you haven't seen it, I will not spoil what happens for you. Just go
yeah,
watch
so good.
Godzilla King of the Monsters. And so... with my biggest pet peeve, to be honest, that is of all of the movies, surprisingly, Godzilla versus Kong is the one that fell the most flat for me. And it's exactly for the reason that you said. Godzilla versus Kong was the absolute perfect moment to bring back Brody Ford, to bring back the Ford family.
Right.
To bring in the children. We have one throwaway line that if you do not know who that character is, if you're not me, and the giant nerd for these things that I am, you have no idea that Joe Morton's character is the son of Corey Forrester's character from from Kong Skull Island. It's incredibly frustrating me, and that is literally the biggest reason. I don't care, like, as much as I love Alexander Skarsgård, and quite frankly, the entire Skarsgård family and their entire oeuvre, because they don't miss. The whole family don't miss, and that's rare. As much as, go watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and that's all I'm going to say about that. As much as I love that family, I did not care about Alexander Skarsgård in that movie. I was waiting for him to die. I was surprised that he made it to the end, to be perfectly honest, because I'm like, why are you here? You should not be here. This is the time to bring, I don't know, the kid, the young man who has a mental connection that was firmly established in Godzilla with Godzilla. He is to Godzilla what the little girl is to Kong.
Right.
This is the perfect time to bring Ford Brody back, because he literally has a mental link with Godzilla. So it was completely illogical to bring him, to bring Skarsgård in and not bring Ford Brody back and have Aaron Taylor Johnson play that character again. It made no sense to me. And
I'll
it
admit.
No, I was just going to say, it threw me out of the film at certain points. I still enjoyed it, but it low-key pissed me off that he was there. And Ford wasn't.
Yeah, it's that, I think the only thing, for me, like the one Achilles heel for all these movies is just the sort of swapping out of different characters. Rebecca Hall's character, Dr. Andrews, like, to me, I, as frustrating as she was as a character, because for whatever reason, she decides that, you know, Dr. Lind, who's, you know, Alex Skarsgård again, who's like there to just help. He's there to help. They all of a sudden just decide to just pile on him, like he's done anything wrong except try to help people. Like, you know, just get dragged out of his basement and you know, and dragged onto a ship, and then he's got to figure things out, and they're just going around calling him coward. I thought that was weird. But I feel like Rebecca Hall is a character, we should have met her at least one or two movies ago. Like, she should be, I can't tell if it's a good thing or a bad thing that watching her in this movie, I was like, why wasn't Dr. Andrews in King, you know, Godzilla King of the Monsters? Why wasn't she part of this collective? Maya Simmons, Isaac Gonzalez's character, where was she? Like, it was sort of, they swap out entire casts despite the fact that you have this organization in Monarch and some of these other, like, you know, sort of shadow organizations and people who do and don't know about the monsters. You have such lack of continuity, but they're bringing in high profile actors for only for them to disappear. It's really weird to me.
The worst part for me is that it would have made absolute sense, not just because from a continuity standpoint, but also from a, I'm sorry, Joe Morton is playing the older version of Corey Forrester's character. Corey Hawkins' character in this movie. So Dr. Houston Brooks, he's playing the older version of Dr. Brooks in this movie. It would have made absolute sense to make Rebecca Hall the daughter of Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson's character, since we had the stinger in Skull Island that they were absorbed into Monarch because of the events that happened and because of their connection, because it was very clear that that Kong connected with both of those characters and that he felt a type of way about them, because he goes out of his way multiple times to save those two characters specifically in Skull Island, even when it's to his detriment.
Right.
That.
And then what happens to them?
They just disappear into the ether. And I'm just like, why, what, so that of all the things about the MonsterVerse, and I love the MonsterVerse, it might be, it slowly snuck up on me as again, one of my favorite franchises. But my biggest issue is they've got to get tighter with the continuity. You have these absolutely, as you said, just amazing actors. And if they're not dead, like Ken Watanabe and Bryan Cranston's characters, if they're not dead, there is no logical reason. Like, why is David Stratham not back? One of my favorite things is that they made him the kind of colonel, the kind of military leader that you want. He listens. Instead of him going in, because that was one of the major cliches of all of these previous movies, the Toho versions and the 90s versions of these movies, was these military leaders not listening to the scientists and just going in half-cocked and causing destruction. And at every turn he goes, doctors, what is your recommendation? How do I save the most civilians? How do I save the most civilians without harming these creatures and keeping the balance? You're telling me that we need these creatures for the balance. Okay. But also, we cannot let them rampage. So I need you to help me help everybody.
Right.
And I thought that that was one of my favorite decisions about the entire MonsterVerse, is that we repeatedly see, except for Sam Jackson's character, and honestly, PTSD is a hell of a drug. His character is so hurt. He's in so much pain that you understand why he completely snaps. But usually in these movies, the military are the bad guys. And when they're all they're trying to do is keep civilians from dying. This isn't the first Die Hard where they're like, those are acceptable casualties. No. This is not that. At every turn in these movies, the military is like, we cannot let this get to civilian populations, but we can't kill them either. So how do we fix this? And so that is another character. Like you said, Aisha Hines, why are these characters who we have seen and loved and they're not dead? Why are we not seeing them again?
You don't put Bradley Whitford in a movie
and then walk away.
And not bring him, and then right. Walk away. You don't.
That's
yeah.
just a tease, man. That's just rude.
So I'm just hoping, you know, with the upcoming movie, we get something of that. What I wanted to ask you about, though, Belle, is do you feel like being more aligned with Toho? More aligned with like how these basically unapologetic, like this is what the monsters have been, this is what they are. Do you think that's been to the benefit? Because I know my opinion, especially after, you know, what has happened with every attempt outside of the MonsterVerse to bring these characters, you know, these kaiju back to life, has turned out. But I'm wondering what you think.
The fact that our kid went back to go watch the old, asked us for their old, for our old VHSs. That's how old they are. And agreed, and something to watch them on of the old Toho ones, because we do not have DVD copies because they don't exist. Of the old Toho ones. Is very telling to me, because they enjoyed the MonsterVerse so much that they wanted to go and see what the inspiration was. And I think that anything that makes you not only love the current iteration, but have a reverence and want to know more about the previous iterations is a good thing. It's kind of like how the Dune movies have made people want to go and read the books. This, the MonsterVerse, has made people, because it does, it is a loving and reverential reimagining of the original Toho verse without being slavishly, pedantically taking to the Tohoverse, if that makes sense. So they do a really good job of honoring what came before, and more importantly, understanding the mindset of what created these movies in the first place. Because for people who don't know, these movies were a visceral reaction to Hiroshima. And so if you don't understand the history of what brought these movies into creation, if you don't understand the trauma, the generational trauma, to be perfectly honest, of our Japanese brothers and sisters after what happened there, then if you don't understand it as a filmmaker, as a cast, as a crew, then you're going to get the Matthew Broderick version of the Godzillaverse.
They are ultimately silly monster movies, but I think there's something that happened outside the franchise that helped them be better. And to me, that thing was Pacific Rim. In the same way that Jason Bourne allowed James Bond to become better and more serious and like more
yes!
exciting
yes!
action, the existence of Pacific Rim, there's only one movie, there was never a sequel, maybe like 2 minutes of one. But like, I feel like the existence of Pacific Rim allowed us to be like, these monsters can be terrifying as they are fun. and the battles can be cool and original, and I think just borrowing so heavily from that allowed us to like it, to apply that to the thing that came before it, to be like, well, you've moved the goalpost, you've moved everything so far in this direction that the only way to do Godzilla is to do Godzilla and Kong in a way that reflects that level of I don't know, of like seriousness, of scale, of, you know, of action, without removing the fun. And I think that was all of those things were contained in the first Pacific Rim movie, and all of those things are echoed and very reminiscent in the MonsterVerse movies. Like, they are not perfect, but they are fun, and they're the kind of movies that like I can put on when I'm like cleaning the house, I can put on when I'm folding laundry, I can put on, you know, when like nothing else is on and I don't want to watch something that's going to annoy me and I don't want somebody else to control my TV and put something on that's annoying. It's like, we're watching the MonsterVerse. And that's kind of what happened. Like, my I love my nieces and nephews and I love my mother-in-law, but being in an entire house full of my in-laws and everyone just being rambunctious, like I was like, you know what? My sister-in-law put on like, started with Godzilla, and I think we just had that TV on for like 7-8 hours of just MonsterVerse movies, and I was like, well, I'm wasting my entire day, but at least I'm not going to be annoyed.
And that's the thing. A, just like with horror, the MonsterVerse movies and the original Toho movies are a way for us as people to process our collective trauma of nuclear attacks, of nuclear fallout, of the way we treat indigenous people. They are a fun but also weirdly deep way of us processing our trauma and not moving past it, but being able to talk about it. The amount of conversations I have had with my nieces and nephews who are young, obviously, or, you know, our child, about, you know, why the way the Iwi was treated in this movie is so much better than they have been treated in previous films, why it was important that they were represented, why this isn't a, you know, this isn't a white savior story, why it's a conversation about what the man's inhumanity had, man, but also, damn, that fight looked good. You know, like, that was, I love the fact that these movies have allowed conversations. And to your point about you with your family, same thing. This is the one universe that my mom, my father-in-law, my child, my nieces and nephews, my husband, we could all, and our collective family could all sit down and watch back to back to back as a family when Christmas starts to get a little too much. And there's like 15 kids running around. And it's like, you know what we're going to watch? Godzilla. Right. Yes, okay. And everybody's in. And I think any franchise that can do that, that can make conversations, that can be just empty fun, but also literally bring generational, because our parents are in their 70s. Obviously, the kids are kids, you know, and literally generationally, you get from 70-year-olds to 13-year-olds, and everybody's in. He has done his job right. It's that simple. And I think as the MonsterVerse, I will say that the biggest issue, and I feel like there's a hint in the most recent trailer that they have realized that. Because if you've seen the most recent trailer, it references every single character that's still alive from the previous films.
All I wanted, Belle.
Yep.
It's all I wanted.
Right. So
in my life.
If they get that tighter and find a way, because now, this is the other thing, and this is a purely from a financial point of view, all of those actors are expensive as hell now. They weren't that expensive when you cast them, but they are now. But if you gotta give them something to do, back, Yeah, if you can get him back, and if you can get him back, even if it's just for a cameo, do it. Do what you need to do. I love this franchise. As I told you guys when we were talking offline, this is one of the few franchises that I watch. This, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars are the three franchises that I watch annually over and over. Like every year, there's at one point where I'm just like, I just need something that makes me happy. The MonsterVerse it is. Throw it on. And it's one of the few franchises not only do I watch, but that I have bought digital physical copies of, which is rare for me. I do not buy physical copies of a lot of films, but I love this franchise so much that I've bought physical copies of it. And so anything that can make me spend my actual money outside of going to see it once in the theater, you've done your job correctly.
So before we do sign off, I want to know what have been your favorite monster appearances or monster fights in the franchise? Do you have a top three that we've seen up to this point?
It's not technically a monster fight,
Okay.
but yo, Tom Hiddleston, machete,
Oh no.
sword, skull crawlers. That was the most bonkers shit I've ever seen in my life. I am a girl who grew up on sci-fi, and when I tell you I was not expecting Tom Hiddleston in a t-shirt, a gas mask, and a sword going to town, I was like, what is happening? And it is one of, much like Luke taking Jabba's entire freighter down, it is one of the most rewatched moments. I have been known to rewind that entire section on repeat and with no objections to anyone in this house. Other than that, the initial fight between Godzilla and King Ghidorah, and the final fight between those two, which was bonkers. And I really love that they leaned into that King Ghidorah is an alien, that he showed up and just because that was something that
Right,
they
that
tried to
he's not
ignore.
one of them, that he's
He's not
not
one
a
of them. And that I really love that. And that scene was just absolutely great. And obviously the fight between Godzilla and Kong, where it went, all right, it was totally that moment where you get in a fight with somebody and then y'all come to a draw and you're like, all right, respect. And I really loved that fight, and I love that moment where the mutual understanding came from. They even say it in the new trailer, Godzilla is the king of the monsters. Kong is the protector of the humans. And once the two of them realized that they were each other's yin and yang, that moment was so great. Also, the sequence in the first Godzilla movie, not necessarily the fight, but the way the sequence in Las Vegas plays out is so stunning. And the use of the music, the way they use the music and to show the sheer destruction of the Mudos was great for me in the first one. What about you?
For a non-fight moment, I think it was the first time we see Godzilla's chonky ass calves. We see that big, like, was it Hawaii that he first shows up, and we're just like, I was like,
He was
oh, we're
thick, miss.
I was like, we are not messing around. This is li like this might as well have been a dude in a suit, with that big chunky calf. But I was like, okay, I'm whatever happens next, I'm on board with. I've loved the fight. I love the two fights in King of the Monsters between Godzilla and Ghidorah. I loved the battle on the ice. It felt like this is terrifying. Like it's a silly monster movie, but at the same time, I was like, ooh. If I was right there, this would be the most terrifying thing ever. And I feel like they did a really good job of pushing that perspective. And then just that, look, I'm a sucker for Rocky movies. I'm a sucker for, diehards. I'm a sucker for, that, like, get knocked down, get knocked down, get knocked down. And then, like, oh, here comes the whooping. Here comes, here comes that moment of triumph. And so at the end of King of the Monsters, when he just charges up, and you're like, oh shit, you're done. You are done, King Ghidorah. And I really enjoyed all of the fights in Godzilla versus Kong. I felt like when you see Godzilla, when you see King Kong, you know, chained onto that ship, it's very reminiscent of like that's when you get that feeling of like what the first King Kong made you feel like in a movie, you know, in a way that that conveys it in a very different way than a 90-year-old movie did, but in a way that feels very much the same. And so there's that like ominousness of like, here comes Godzilla and King Kong is chained to this boat. And so that fight, you know, and watching him destroy an aircraft carrier, I was just like, I'm glad I'm out of the Navy now.
You're but like, then that I've fight, done enough of that on my right, own.
I didn't blow anything up. But that was such a great fight. And then I think I just like part ones and part twos of those fights because the big fight between the two of them before Mechagodzilla even shows up, it was like, you know, you get to have these moments with these monsters, but each one of them got to do their absolute, like, put it all out there. King Kong, you know, very nearly won that. And then to me, like, Godzilla just standing there and just being like, right in his face. I was like, yeah! Because they had to, like, basically double King Kong in size from one movie to the next just to make him even capable of going toe-to-toe with my boy Godzilla. And so then to see them team up at the end, that was fun, but it was sort of like a bonus. Like I'd already gotten what I wanted, which was, you know, Godzilla just being a beast. And so, yeah, I think the only thing that does feel not contrived, but a little bit like, all right, is the fact that like, we can't have one King of the Monsters because Godzilla and King Kong have both been around for almost 100 years now in movie lore. And so you're not going to be able to just put one over the other at this point. You know, their first matchup was in the 40s, 50s.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's been a long time. There really isn't a way to like say, you know, we can have our personal number ones, but I think it's pretty clear the Monsterverse is not going to let us have just a number one, and that's fine.
I'm not mad at it.
But those, each of those
Godzilla
fights was
and
just,
Kong.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm each not of those anything. Anything that gives us the two of them. Just when I tell you, when the first trailer dropped, I screamed so bad, I scared my dogs. I was like, "What's happening? What is happening? Oh God!" So yeah, there are very few things these days that can just make you smile in terms of film or television, where you're just like, it's almost like a warm, comforting blanket that you know what you're going to get, but you also know it's going to be well acted. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to actually make you think. And the Monsterverse does a really good job of doing all of those things while also giving us some of the best fights put to cinema. And shout out to the motion capture actors, one of whom is in Skull Island. I don't know if you guys realize this, but Toby Kebbell, who plays Major Jack Chapman in Skull Island, is also the motion capture person for Kong. And so shout out to the actors who make these characters, because they do not get the credit that the human quote-unquote actors do, and I think that they should, for imbuing Godzilla and Kong with so much emotion that you understand everything. And those characters obviously don't say a word, but you understand all that they're feeling, and that is 100% the motion capture actors. So good job to you guys. I cannot wait to watch Godzilla and Kong. I cannot wait to get my plushie of the baby Kong, because I need it in my life so badly. It is, as soon as I saw him, I was like, well, I will have to have that because I want him, and I want to snuggle him and his little red face. So keep on doing what y'all are doing, and keep on smartly giving us at least 3 to 4 years in between and not inundating the market. We appreciate you. On that note, this is Belle with Pop Culture Uncovered. You can find us at PC Uncovered on Twitter and Instagram, Pop Culture Uncovered on Facebook, Patreon, and Tumblr, and PopCultureUncovered.com. Please check in for our YouTube channels, our website, and our podcast, which you can find on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play Podcasts, which I guess is now currently YouTube Podcasts, and Amazon Podcasts and Spotify. If you like us, please feel free to like and subscribe to us, and we will see you at the next one. Peace.